Okay. So let's see. We were at Earth, then we went to Mars. Now we're going to go into space in low Earth orbit. Talking about plant growth in microgravity, lessons learned from Vomit Comet and Space Station, and Robert Heinz will be giving the presentation.
Great, thank you. This talk will take you back a little bit more to growing plants in space, and I guess in some sense also to the Martian movie, despite the fact that I'm from the state of Idaho. I did not choose the potato image there, but the tomato image there. And being from the state of Idaho, the Idaho Potato Commission is always very proud to point out that the Martian book specifically points out that these are Idaho potatoes. If you have read the book, though, you realize he was not actually that excited about Idaho potatoes. But anyways, and so the talk today is about previous and past lessons that we've learned from experiments on soil, and I realize I'm using the term soil in a very sloppy manner, from parabolic flight experiments and space station experiments. And these experiments are very much focused at understanding how water and gases move and contribute to plant growth under reduced gravity, and that's what I want to present to you today. Okay. So this, as I said, was past experiments. A number of years ago, we, for the very first paper that I ever published out of my PhD, had this CSA News headline there, and it said, "Uncovering the Challenges of Watering in Plants in Space." And now that I had some time to think about it, I decided, well, I should probably revise this little headline there a little bit. Bruce will probably revise it and say, well, uncovering the challenges of providing enough solar radiation to the plants, but I revised it in the sense of saying that we now need to uncover the challenges of providing adequate continuous airflow pathways for the diffusive exchange of root zone gases in space. Granted, it is not as catchy as the previous one, but the rest of the talk is basically trying to detail to you and explain to you what I mean by this rather lengthy phrase there. So we're going back into plant growth in space, granted this is on Earth, and looking at the root zone and what the root zone contributes to plant growth. And we do expect quite a bit from this soil or porous medium there to contribute to plant growth. And Bruce talked about the buffering capacity of this fantastic soil system. So we protect you, we expect UV protection, structural support for the roots, nutrition, microbial habitat that we just talked about, aeration, and hydration. And if you start looking at these, you quickly realize, well, this is really a balancing problem to try to provide all of these simultaneously through this root zone to the plant. You can't just go and say, oh, I'm going to maximize hydration and I'm going to expect fantastic results, because if you do this, well, if you maximize hydration, then your microbial habitat will suffer, aeration will suffer, and nutrition will suffer, and so forth. So you can go through this problem, and you quickly realize that of all the things that become limiting to plant growth, probably the most important one, other than the solar radiation, is this dichotomy between liquid transport and storage and gas exchange, because these two use two very different pathways in the soil to transport their respective constituents to the plant. If you have a water-filled pore, that pore no longer contributes to the gas transport to the root zone, and vice versa. So you got to find the right balance between these two to be able to deliver both to the plant through the root zone. So past experience for growing plants in space has shown us that we're not doing so well with this particular balance. So this is a rather old paper by now, but it's showing that I have a point here, that we are in reduced gravity experiencing hypoxia. So ADH is an enzyme which is very symptomatic of reduced oxygen in the root zone, which we describe as hypoxia. So apparently we are having problems not so much with water delivery, but with delivery of oxygen to the root zones, and thereby also with the gas exchange within the root zone. It's not only the oxygen going in, but also metabolic gases having to move out of the root zone. So back to, or sort of backing up out of this and looking at, well, how did we get to the point where we have not enough oxygen to the root zone, and how are we trying to, at least currently, achieve this balance between hydration and aeration in these space greenhouses? So one thing they all have in common is that we need to contain things in these space greenhouses. Neither particles nor water can leave the system at any time because we are in reduced gravity environment or zero gravity environment. So we contain things in a sense. We have very high root zone demands. These are small root zones, high root densities, and very limited resilience in the system, if you want to think about it that way. And we chose to use a porous medium, and by we, this is sort of the consensus in the community at the time, to use millimeter-sized porous baked ceramic aggregates for plant growth in space. And there were several reasons to do that. The material is lightweight, so we're back at this weight savings as long while it's dry. It has very high porosity, close to 70%. Some of that is macroporosity, some of it is microporosity. It is very consistent. It can be reused quite easily, at least for a number of crop rotations in the system. And it has a water retention characteristic that I'll show you in a minute that allows water to be managed in the system within a relatively narrow range of suction, which is quite advantageous because that's how we control water in the system. We have porous membranes embedded in the system in some sense, and we supply water and nutrients at a slight suction, at a slight negative potential, such that water can be supplied with adequate aeration at the same time ensuring that water cannot leave that particular root zone. Okay. So let's do a little make-believe and start looking at this water retention characteristic and how that changes the water distribution within the system if you start playing with gravity. So on the left here, we have the terrestrial situation. So let's say we have a 10 centimeter tall root zone. It'll be pretty typical, a pot with a plant in it. And we manage water in the system such that we have a porous membrane sitting right here in the middle, which supplies water to the system at minus 5 centimeters of water, and a slight negative potential there. If we do this on Earth, what we're basically producing in terms of a water distribution within this little pot is the water retention characteristic. How many of you are familiar with the water retention characteristic? Okay, quite a few of you, but not all of you. Basically, what it is, it describes the amount of water that can be held within a particular pore as a function of the energy status. And it turns out it's a hysteretic relationship. So depending on whether you are draining a particular substrate or whether you are wetting up a particular substrate, you follow two different characteristics. And these two main characteristics describe a region within you can find a water content as a function of height in this particular system. And you can have scanning curves going in between them for something that is a process which doesn't quite follow the two extremes. So the shaded area in this plot describes sort of possible water distribution within the system depending on whether you were on a drying or wetting path. So if we now take this particular system and we move to a planetary habitat, what happens is that you're basically scaling these water retention characteristics to come up with a new water distribution within the system. And if you take it to the extreme to where you're switching gravity off altogether, all you find yourself left with is the bounds of the lowest water content and the highest water content possible, which correspond to the values that you had here at minus 5 centimeters of suction, this one and this one. And now the question is, well, what is the true water distribution in the system? And in addition to that, you have some of these sort of confounding or additional things that may change the distribution of water in the system. One is changes in contact angle, which for the most part become important for particle sizes larger than the millimeter sized particles we're looking at. Particle rearrangement and segregation can do funny things in the absence of zero gravity and preferential capillary pathways. For the last two here, we've done all we could to try to avoid these by packing these particular meter as homogeneous as we could and as tightly as we could to avoid this particular effect. So for the most part, we're really just looking at water distribution as a function of the hysteretic water retention characteristic. So the first set of experiments we had was in variable gravity. You get 20 seconds or thereabouts of almost zero gravity, but you get a penalty and you have this hypergravity phase preceding it. We have almost twice Earth's gravity, which makes some of these experiments quite challenging. So what we think would happen in the system then is you have a water distribution like we just described for the terrestrial case. Now that one gets scaled by twice the Earth's gravity at the onset of the zero gravity phase, and you have a distribution of hydraulic potentials in the system which show a gradient according to the gravitational potential gradient. And if you move to the zero gravity phase to 20 seconds, well, then somehow that hydraulic potential has to homogenize because the gravitational potential was now being switched off, and we have to attain some water distribution, which is, again, between the two confines of the drying and wetting characteristic here. And we actually do see this in the data quite well. So here we have the wiggly line signs. So this is the gravity phase, or the gravity force up on top here, and then we have four different water contents with measurements at three different heights in that particular root zone, if you want to think of it that way. And what happens is that as we go to a zero gravity phase, the gradient and hydraulic potential disappears. We're attaining a homogeneous potential, and we're seeing that part of the cell apparently is wetting and part of the cell is drying. So all the water that was pushed to the bottom in the hypergravity phase is now rising in zero gravity, with the end result that the bottom part of your root zone is draining, the top part is wetting. So we're on two different ends of the bounds with the water retention characteristic. So if we look at what that means in terms of water content, here's a different cell where we have now a 4 centimeter tall sample, and we have water content measurements within the sample which are 2 centimeters vertically apart. And you'll see that throughout this experiment, gravity is changing. We have our zero gravity phases in here every so often, and we go through the cell, we take water out, put water back in, take water out, put water back in. And we see, and this is at least for the soil physics community somewhat unexpected, very large gradients in water content maintained in the system despite the fact that we go through these zero gravity phases here, and technically, or we would have a homogeneous potential within the cell. So, which really shows that depending on whether this particular part of the cell was drying or wetting, you can have very large gradients in water content maintained in your system. And that is consistent with theory, but it's unexpected for what we would experience here on Earth. So you can take this all to extreme, and you quickly realize, well, in order to really get some estimate of porous media hydraulic properties, what I need to do then is to minimize the vertical extent of my sample, which we did here, to go to a 1 centimeter tall sample to try to measure the water retention characteristic itself and answer the question, well, does that itself change as we go to zero gravity? And it most likely doesn't. So we have the 1G case, and based on these short parabolic flight experiments, we see that the water retention characteristic is reasonably similar to what we've measured here on Earth. But the characteristic time and length scales that you have in this parabolic flight are relatively short, so it's much better to do these kind of measurements under sustained microgravity, and we have the opportunity with the help of the Russians and this Russian cosmonaut here to run experiments on the International Space Station. And here we see the same thing, that the water retention characteristic is basically statistically indistinguishable from the one that was measured on Earth. Here we have three different experimental setups, the one measuring things in microgravity for three similar porous media, and then these two systems being used on Earth, the difference between them being that this is the exact same system being used in microgravity, but it has a relatively high vertical extent, so we came up with yet another experimental system which minimized the vertical extent to minimize what Earth's gravity does to the water content distribution as a function of height, so that it's more comparable to what we would measure under microgravity conditions. So takeaway is that the water retention characteristics are quite similar, and then the question is, well, what happens to, and I'll skip ahead, to the oxygen diffusion part, and here's where we saw the big differences. So here again we have two 1G systems and then the microgravity systems, and what we're seeing here is that the wetting characteristic for the oxygen diffusion coefficient here now as a function of how much air is in the system, so going from very wet to very dry, is quite similar. But as we go to the draining part, we start to see differences, and the differences are most pronounced for the mix and profile media, which are the smaller particle size media, where we see a very big change in terms of the process dependence here between what we measured on Earth and what we measured here. Unfortunately, we don't see how things continued because a power bump at the International Space Station prevented us from seeing how this thing would have developed further, but our projection would be that it would be quite different, meaning that the oxygen diffusion in this particular system would be much less than what we would expect on Earth, which brings us back to the initial slide, which said, well, it's really about maintaining enough gas-filled pathways for the gas exchange in these particular root zones and how we have to change our management of these root zones under these systems. And I'll end with this slide. Thank you.